Welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin. Have you ever looked at your photos and said to yourself, oh, I wish I had a chance to take that shot again? Sometimes we never get that extra second to capture that special moment or a second chance to make that first impression. We can't rewind unless, of course, we have a time machine, but we can learn ways to help make those pics the best they can be. Fortunately, today we have two very talented individuals here from Toastmasters International Headquarters to help us do that. Bambi Cash is the graphic designer and event photographer at Toastmasters International. She collaborates with Blake Carver on photo and product shoots and is the lead photographer at the International Convention and other events. Bambi also supports digital marketing campaigns and contributes to Toastmaster Magazine. She is a graduate from the University of Northern Colorado and brings experience from the design industry, including a background in wedding and portrait photography. These are what helps shape her creative approach and visual storytelling at Toastmasters International. Blake Carver is the senior video production specialist at Toastmasters International, where he oversees and produces all of the organization's video content. Blake is also a graduate of the Los Angeles Recording School in Hollywood, California, where he began in audio engineering before shifting to video production, building 19 years of experience as a videographer, editor, and photographer. Blake also handles photography, including presidential portraits and product shots, alongside his colleague Bambi Cash. With a unique blend of technical skill and creative vision, Blake brings Toastmasters stories to life across multiple media. Blake and Bambi are also the authors of the article, How to Take Great Photos, The Do's and Don'ts for Making Your Pictures the Best They Can Be, featured in the June 2025 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. Coming to us today from Toastmasters headquarters in Englewood, Colorado, just south of Denver, Bambi Cash and Blake Carver, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Thank you, Greg. Thanks for having us. It's an honor.
I'm excited.
It's an honor for me because it's rare that we get to speak with the folks behind the scenes at headquarters who create all that magic for us. And I know for myself, I'm always in awe of the visual materials that you create. Because I know when I'm producing material or creating material, I'm so happy that we have stock photography and photos, et cetera. And of course, the magazines just look great.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
I'm not sure if you realize, but both of you have the same initials, BC.
I didn't realize that, but now I do. That's
I call that behind the camera, BC.
There you go.
So, of course, we've had your little bio, and we'd also like for listeners to get to know you just a little bit better, perhaps hear a little bit what you do. To start off, maybe Bambi, what do you love about what you do? And perhaps maybe you can describe a memorable project that you worked on or maybe something that you're working on.
That's a great question. Thank you, Greg. You know, my time here has been so amazing and getting to work with really amazing people. And honestly, my favorite part is working the convention, taking the event photography there and meeting all kinds of people, all kinds of Toastmasters members and hearing their perspective on the organization itself. And it's really rewarding. And every year I come back and I feel my cup is full. And I have a really great team I work with. I work with Blake. I work with Christy Oblonsky, our social media expert on the team. And it's really awesome.
Now that's awesome. There is so much eye candy at the International Convention. I know I've taken many pictures, but they don't come anywhere near close to the photos that you produce. What about you, Blake?
Well, I've been at World Headquarters as the in-house video production guy for almost 10 years. And I always say I'm the luckiest guy at World Headquarters because I get to hear all of the amazing stories from our members, particularly at the conventions. So we do all kinds of interviews there. And I just get to hear all of the amazing things Toastmasters does for people. It's just kind of one great project after another. And I'm very lucky. As far as memorable projects, probably the most recent one, probably the biggest project I've ever done in my career was directing and writing and producing and shooting and editing and doing the voiceover for the Toastmasters documentary that came out during the 100-year anniversary. So that was a big project. It was very rewarding, very fulfilling, because it gave me this big behind-the-scenes historical view of the organization. Yeah, I had a lot of fun making it, and it's a lot of stuff like that. It's a lot of just telling the story of Toastmasters as an organization and of the members specifically. And it's always a lot of fun and I enjoy doing it.
It was a wonderful companion to the large hardcover book. And
yes, mm-hmm.
I knew you had your work cut out for you trying to cover 100 years. And I think it's 45 minutes of documentary, if I remember.
Correct. We had digitized a bunch of historical footage that were in our archives that were just kind of sitting there from decades past. And it was just such a cool glimpse into our past and into our history. And yeah, it was a lot of work, but it was great.
That's awesome. International Convention, again, is a perfect setting for photos. So, Bambi, I'm just wondering, let's talk about the convention. How, for example, would you plan your photos? Is there some sort of a philosophy or a mindset or a framework that you use?
Yeah, we do a lot of planning before convention. We're actually starting now. We meet with different event owners as a team, and we kind of figure out what their needs are from a photo perspective and video as well. For me, I'm trying to figure out also what these photos are going to be used for in the future and how it's going to be beneficial to our members. From there, I create with the help of Christy, we create a shot list and I use it very religiously during convention and I follow that. And I'm really trying to be in the perspective of our members. It's like a really fun part of the job because I'm attending convention, but I'm also working it. But I get to also listen in on the education sessions and also take photos. And I'm thinking of it from a member's perspective. If I see these photos, like what makes me want to go to convention?
Yeah, that's awesome because I know attending convention, you see photographers everywhere. And it almost appears like they're just taking shots, but yet in the back of their mind, they have a plan going.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. Blake, in your bio, it mentions that you do presidential portraits. So yes. Out of curiosity, when you're preparing for that, how do you prepare the individual? And then what goes through your mind in terms of saying, okay, we need to take a photo or a series of photos. Now we have to bring the story to life.
Yeah, well, with the presidential portraits, it's a balance of schedule because the incoming international president, we usually do the portrait before they're actually inaugurated. It's kind of getting the schedule dialed in. They're very busy people. In that allowed time, it's trying to capture them as authentically as possible and not trying to put too much of an artistic spin on it, I would say, or too much of a stylistic spin. We really just want to capture them and what they're about. And then we have to think ahead with where we're going to be using the photo. And most commonly, it's going to be on the cover of the magazine, of the Toastmaster magazine, and an article that is essentially a bio on them after they've been inaugurated. And then for various press needs throughout their term. It's really just getting to know them as much as possible and observing how they hold themselves. They may have a more of a preference towards standing and talking, let's say, versus being seated and more posed. And we try and lean into whatever their personality dictates and even their message and what they will hope to accomplish during their term as international president. At the end of the day, it's really just trying to showcase who they are as authentically as possible.
That's interesting. It's almost like an actor preparing for a role, because when I just recently I interviewed Dilip Abhisekera, because he of course is the host convention chair, and I also recently spoke with past international president Morag Matheson, and when I look at the picture of Dilip and I look at the picture of Morag, I go, yeah, that's Dilip, yeah, that's Morag. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Both of you produce fine quality photos, but I'm also curious, what was a big lesson that you learned when you first started out? And we'll start with Bambi on this one.
For me, it's not just about pointing and shooting, right? And it's about being intentional. And I think that's like a big theme for us, especially this whole conversation. That's something I learned quite quickly on, is that each picture, you have to be very intentional. You have to know what you want to capture. And you want to know what you want to put into focus.
And how about you, Blake?
I would say one of the biggest things I learned at the outset, and it's a hard lesson to learn because it's an expensive lesson. And that lesson is you don't need to have expensive equipment isn't going to determine the quality of your photo. The cool thing about photography is that it very much is it's a skills-based art form. So if someone really understands composition and lighting and just real surface level technical basics of their camera, they can really pull off some good photos. So a lot of times people, when they're starting out, they will try and buy their way out of bad pictures by investing in more expensive equipment. And that's just not the right way to go about it. Photography is a very learnable skill. It's something that, compared to other art forms, doesn't require a lot of, let's say, like manual dexterity. So if you wanted to get into oil painting or learning a musical instrument or something like that, you have to learn how to control your hands. One of the biggest differences with photography and other art forms is you really just have this camera, which is a very ergonomically designed tool. It's all there. It's just pressing buttons and moving focus rings. It's something most people will be able to do. You then just have to learn the skills and learn sort of some high level concepts surrounding composition and surrounding lighting. And so it's very learnable. That's something that real early on when I started out, you know, you're trying to solve the problem of maybe a not so great picture. The good news is you don't have to spend a ton of money to get out of that problem. You just learn some basic skills and just of course put in the hours practicing, and you can become a very good photographer.
Right. So you don't have to go out and buy an iPhone 16 Pro the day before you're leaving on a trip.
Correct.
So the article, of course, is to help us improve. And in the article, there's a series of pictures. Of course, we're audio here, so we can't visualize them, but we'll be talking a little bit about that. But the whole idea is to take a picture, and instead of doing A, you want to do B. What are some of the most common mistakes and misconceptions, and how can people fix some of those?
I think that kind of goes with what you were just saying, Blake, right? That just by buying an expensive camera and equipment doesn't necessarily equal better photos. And like you said, it's a learnable skill. Common mistakes people make is also forgetting what they're actually taking a photo of, like what really realizing what's the subject.
Kind of piggybacking off of that, probably a common mistake is just a lack of intentionality with the photos you're taking. Sort of the high level rules of photography, things like the rule of thirds and just some basic lighting concepts. A lot of those are in place just to help it look like you took an intentional photo. So bad photos they're usually bad because they look unintentional. Similar to figuring out what your subject is and really what you're trying to say with the picture. Along those same lines, it's just being intentional and really setting up the composition for your shot in a way that you want, and getting the lighting and all that how you as the photographer want. And that's a fairly common mistake, but some of the high level rules do help with that. And even some of the tips in the article just to help it make it look more intentional.
We quite often see large group shots, and what we'll see is that there's 20 people and they're all lined up in one big line. What's your recommendation there?
For me, I would want to have them lined up in rows, stack them from tallest and then more shorter people up front, and then just have it a little bit more uniformed and have it look like it, like we said, intentional, and have people kind of closer together. So it's not one big line and then we lose details of their faces.
Yeah, I see some people that are kneeling in one of the pictures. I know that's not always possible for...
Right, of course.
Depending on what people are wearing, but I thought that's actually quite clever.
Yeah, I think, you know, like, especially for these, like, kind of club or large group shots, you want to show the togetherness, right? You want to show everyone's closeness and the relationships between everyone. And I think it's a nice, cozy looking image.
Now, photos, of course, are still images, but we want to also portray a little bit of movement. And I understand from the article that that helps bring out the photos. So can you share a little bit about movement and gestures and perhaps the do's and don'ts and things to do or things not to do?
Yeah. For example, when I'm shooting event photography at convention, I'm usually tasked with taking photos of speakers on stage, doing a lot of body movements and gestures, but of course, like, nothing that would be possibly offensive. I think the difference between that is it's very neutral stances and neutral movements, whereas thumbs up and peace signs can be seen as offensive in other religions and cultures.
Yeah. So you want to use movement, but you need to be cautious about movements or gestures that may have different international meanings.
Correct.
So what are some of the safe ones?
I would say safe ones, and these are usually way easier to control when it's a posed photo as opposed to a like an event photo, like what Bambi does at convention. You don't have a whole lot of control over that type of stuff. But if it's a posed photo, things like thumbs up, peace signs, anything that's just has a very specific meaning, and you just have to use your best judgment with that, are usually a good idea to stay away from. But things that seem to have universal acceptance, like waving, jazz hands even, those are pretty universally accepted and okay. But, you know, you just have to trust your instinct. And if it seems like a, you know, specific type of gesture, it's better just to tell people to not do that.
Interesting. So if you're watching a group of people who are interacting, you take multiple pictures and you're sort of waiting for the right moment?
Kind of. Yeah. Sometimes I would take a few shots and then try to find the in-between that works best.
Yeah. Even with posed photos, it's kind of like that too. You have to take a bunch in a row. Anything where the number of people in the photo increases, you just have to, at least I find you end up having to take more pictures, mm-hmm. because there's just more things can go wrong. Even if it's not hand gestures, it can mm-hmm. be blinking and people looking off to the side and mm-hmm. things like that. So the more people, the more control you have to have over the situation and just directing, just taking more pictures within reason. It's kind of a safeguard for some of that stuff.
I was thinking like the digital age right now, that's the best part about it. You can take as much as you want. Mm-hmm. But if we were in like the film, like photography era, then it'd be a little bit harder.
Yeah, totally. So you look at old photos, they do tend to be more posed. Mm-hmm. And that's because it was just more expensive to take one shot.
True. Quite often you'll see an image or a photo of somebody presenting an award or receiving an award. Mm-hmm. Quite often it's shaking hands. Are there any recommendations or suggestions to get the right shot with that?
I think a good shot of someone getting an award is like the person being handed the award, the shaking hands, you know, a picture of them like exchanging pleasantries, and then another shot of them looking at the camera while their hands are still shaking.
Yeah, I would say too, as much as is practical, if you can have the person presenting the award, if you can talk to them ahead of time and even mark the ground or the floor, which is with like a little bit of tape to where that's the area where they present the award. Because what can happen too is it can be blocked by the lectern. So if you have your presenter sort of step away from the lectern, you know, just a few steps, just so they're not being blocked onto that marker you maybe put down. And that's something that you just have to coordinate with them ahead of time. Then that way nothing's getting blocked. And then it's always a good posed shot to have the award, you know, kind of in the center of maybe the two people, and then with the handshake. And there's different ways to do it, but I would say if you can make sure you're not getting blocked on that shot, that's always good. That's a good first start.
I see that it's quite common, not at the international convention, of course, but I've seen it at other conferences and conventions, not necessarily Toastmasters, is the person giving the award, they're at the lectern or are on the podium in front of the mic. The person comes right up to the mic, whereas they might need to move a little sideways. I also mm-hmm. notice sometimes they'll stand at the back of the stage when you've got the whole stage in front of you to take the photos.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah, that can happen.
I love in the article that you say, do use unconventional and eye-catching displays or poses. I love that.
With these photos, I think it's safe to say, you know, get creative with these ribbons and these awards. Make use of the items around you, and, you know, it's okay to use props a little bit. People who get these ribbons and awards, like, I think they should showcase it. They should be proud of it and really make that the forefront of the photo.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. The image in the article of a gentleman who gets the Best Speaker Award, the little ribbon is up front and center and you see his hands that are big and he's a little in the background, but you can tell he's excited that he got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
And it's a good way to photograph things that might otherwise be difficult to capture. Because like you look at that Best Speaker ribbon. I mean, the ribbon itself isn't very big. So if you're just holding that, especially towards the back of the stage or the speaking area, you're not really even going to know what the award is or what's even happening. Creatively, on this one, you just force it right to the front of the frame or right to the front of the composition, and you can still see he's excited to have the award, and it communicates everything that needs to.
Yeah. I mean, this is the after shot. The first shot probably would have been of him accepting the award from whoever is giving it to him, but this one actually has more impact.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about backgrounds. We find often that the backgrounds have to be photoshopped, if you will.
Yeah. The safest backgrounds are going to be probably the most neutral. Just nothing that is super specific to maybe the location, like if you were at a restaurant, you wouldn't maybe necessarily want a big restaurant logo in the background and that kind of thing. But you know, neutral's always safest and uncluttered, presentable looking. You know, it kind of goes back to the making it look intentional. Like if you can make the background at least look somewhat well put together and intentional, then that helps. But then probably a big one for backgrounds is, at least for me, when it comes to lighting, is just make sure you're not capturing your subjects with their backs to a big window. So if you have, like, a lot of times you'll go into a building and if you have big, beautiful windows, those are great, but don't have those be your background, because your subjects are just going to be all backlit and you're not going to be able to see them really. Probably neutral is safest, but if it's something specific that you want to capture of the background, so for in some of the examples we have it in our Smedley Museum here at World Headquarters, then just try and incorporate it. So in those photos you see, like in the selfies they took, there's a picture of Ralph Smedley in the background, and they're including that in it. And it's a very intentional move. It's kind of another thing of just using your best judgment in the situation. Like neutral safest, probably especially for big group shots. But if you're in somewhere that you want to capture that is kind of a memorable place for you, then yeah, just try and incorporate it in a tasteful and intentional way as possible.
Yeah, selfies. That's a good topic. Let's talk a little bit about that. You mentioned intentional background. I see the picture in the article of Dr. Ralph Smedley, which is a great shot with the Legacy Toastmasters logo. Tell us a little bit about taking those selfies.
I think for selfies, the best way to take them is by using your outside arm. So the person on the outside of the group, take it with your outside arm and having the shutter button closest to you.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
If you're left-handed, you want to stay on the left side. And if you're right-handed, you want to move to the right side.
Yeah, exactly. And I would say, too, another tip with that is have everybody in the picture looking at the camera, at the actual lens of your, assuming it's a smartphone. Mm-hmm. What can happen a lot of times is people will look at the image on the screen or worse, at your thumb, at the person's thumb on the button. And then their eye line, it looks a little off. If you can just sort of direct everybody as best as possible just to look at the camera itself, the actual lens, it's going to look much more personal and much more engaging. If you can get a relatively tall person, and angle the camera or kind of have them with their arm outstretched, holding the camera at a bit of a downward angle, as opposed to an angle looking up at people. People tend to photograph a little better when they're looking up at something. So that's another tip for that, to make those look a little better.
I also noticed that they're not in a line. Are the rules different for selfies than just taking the regular group shots?
I feel like with selfies, they're pretty informal to begin with. You know, if you want to stay in a line, stay in a line. But if you want to get close, I think that's fine too. I don't think some of these rules could be super hard and fast. The intention is you want to capture all the people in the photo. So it makes sense that they're a little bit grouped together, but sometimes they work well in the line too.
Excellent.
Yeah. And for informal photos, you kind of just do what you have to do.
Yeah.
And just, you know, you're just trying to get people's faces seen clearly and everybody represented in the photo. And so some of the rules can be broken in those cases.
Any suggestions for taking photos, perhaps in a situation where you can't use a flash and your lighting is not ideal?
My first thought was, can you go outside? And if it's light out, yeah, definitely go outside.
Yeah, exactly. Some of the best lighting you're going to encounter is going to be natural sunlight. Ideally, if it's overcast, then it's even better. Bonus points if it's overcast. But if not, then you can still make it work. If you have windows, they don't even have to be huge windows. Just something that's letting in a lot of light. That's an amazing light source. Stuff usually looks better lit by sunlight anyway. But if you have a flash kit and you, this gets a little tricky with selfies. Yeah, if you have a flash kit, it's great, but it's not, I wouldn't say it's a necessity. Short of going outside or using a big window, just try and flip on as many lights as you can. If you're in a room, like if your club meets in kind of like a meeting room at an office building, let's say, just try to have all the lights on as best as possible. Most modern cameras, especially the cameras built into your smartphone, or do a pretty good job of auto exposure. You want to help out that feature as much as possible by just throwing as much light as possible in the environment onto your subjects.
Okay, so you say the light shouldn't be behind the subject. Where's the ideal positioning for the light? Is it above? Is it in front? Is it on the side? Where is the ideal position for lighting?
Definitely in front. Bonus points if it's in front and above. Mm-hmm. And even more bonus points if it's in front and above. It's maybe slightly off to one side, but that's getting a little, that's probably asking too much. But for sure in front, and especially if you're shooting something that's very rapid fire, if it's a high action kind of day and you're just trying to get the pictures, and just focus on just that first one of just making sure the light is in front of them and not behind them. That'll do most of the heavy lifting.
I find often that either we're not smiling or our eyes end up being closed. And in the article, you have this really neat tip that I'd never heard of. You want to share that with us?
For this one, if it's a big group, I like to tell people to shut their eyes and then on the count of three, open them. And then that's when I take the shot. And that can ensure that 99% of the time, everyone's eyes will be open.
Yeah.
Sort of photo.
That's brilliant. It's something you never think about.
That helps with outdoor shots too, particularly if it's a really harsh sunny day. If you just get everyone to kind of close their eyes and then pop them open right when you tell them to, that's going to keep them from kind of chronically squinting throughout all the photos.
I was taking some shots yesterday, and I know we're going to get to that shortly, and it was in direct sunlight. The sunlight was there. Well, the sun was everywhere, and I'm trying to keep my eyes open, and they're just watering all over the place, and I forgot this tip. I read it, and I forgot about it. In the article, it shows different perspectives. So if we're talking, for example, for, you know, your club PR, and you have an opportunity to take multiple shots. So you say, well, you can either focus on the audience or you can focus on the speaker. But sometimes you can only use one picture and you want to capture both. Is there a best way to do that?
Yeah. A trick that I like to use to capture both the speaker and the audience is something I like to do during convention is I try to sneak onto the stage while the speaker is speaking on stage. And I try to capture a side shot of them speaking facing the audience. And that's a pretty good shot. You know, we kind of like to use sort of magazine. Another one that I try to get is directly behind the speaker themselves. So then you see the back of them, hopefully doing a really cool gesture or having their arms out. Even better if that you can see their audience and the audience's reaction as well.
Oh, interesting. So it's not a concern not seeing the speaker's face as much?
Sometimes. It's all about the intention. For example, I would use that photo for an article about talking about audience reactions or just reactions in general, or emotional intelligence would be a good one.
Yeah, I guess it leads back to what you're saying is it's not just know your audience, but know the intention. I think that's a key word, intention.
Yeah, having as much as is practical, having a shot list going into any kind of project is really helpful. There's no photography project too small, I think, that won't benefit from a shot list. Okay. And that kind of sets you up for how to actually compose your shots and light them and all of that.
Now, I know there's many different phones on the market, but perhaps is there one or two basic tips or basic settings that you could use that are pretty universal for a phone?
I would say most phones have focus lock capability and even exposure lock capability. So it's really just tapping and holding on a certain subject in your photo, and then it'll lock the focus onto that instead of the autofocus kind of not knowing what to grab in the photo. It just directs it to where you're tapping and holding. So most phones have that. That's quite handy. Even the auto exposure one is pretty handy too, because sometimes there's situations where you do have a bright light source either off to the side or kind of behind your subjects, and you can't, just the circumstances dictate, you can't really get out of it. the auto exposure will try and expose or split the difference between the foreground and the background. But if you can tap and hold on your subjects and have those be what your camera is exposing for, and then the background just gets blown out, then that's fine. But that's a handy way to do that. The tap and hold features, they're pretty universal, but it's just sort of a way to direct the camera to do what you want it to do.
I have another tip that I just thought of, but something I figured out over the weekend is if you're editing a photo using the editing features on your phone. So for example, if you're using Apple and you're using the Photos app, there's some limited features where you can edit the photo a little bit. You can actually copy those edits and then paste it into like another photo.
Oh yeah, cool.
Within the same series, so then they all look uniform.
I've been using an iPhone for years. I never knew that. Thank you for that.
Oh yeah. I think it's a newer feature, but it's been my favorite.
Awesome.
Yeah. Wipe the lens off.
Yeah. I had to tell my parents that all the time.
Yeah. You know, it's in your pocket all day or your purse or whatever, and it's your lens is likely to be dirty. So just wipe it off on, it doesn't have to be anything fancy, just on your shirt, just kind of buff it out. Both the front facing camera and the rear facing camera, like just go ahead and do both.
One neat image in the article is a picture of a shot that's taken through fingers. I thought that was actually quite clever.
Sometimes when you don't even have props, you just have your bodies, right? So you just use your hands to frame the photo as an extra way to really have fun with the image and show a little bit more personality in the photo.
Yeah.
Nice.
And one of the things I love about photography is there's so many things in your environment that will improve the photo just through framing. So similar to this one where, you know, they're kind of making the frame with their hands, and it's a cool creative way to do it. You never know what is even in your background that you could use as kind of a frame to sort of frame around your subject. So there could be a cool looking arched doorway, an entrance into a building. There could be even a tree with a big limb kind of hanging over and kind of curling around that you could sort of get people placed in the image to where there's this neat framing happening. There's all kinds of things in the environment that you can get creative with. Most people don't notice until you're going to take pictures. It's like, oh yeah, that thing's pretty cool. That would look good if some people were kind of maybe around that or placed underneath it or whatever.
Awesome. Folks, if you've taken away some golden nuggets from this, I encourage you to share this episode with your friends and family. You can find the Toastmasters podcast at toastmasterspodcast.com, toastmasters.org, Apple, Spotify, and anywhere you get your podcasts. I also encourage you to check out Blake and Bambi's article, How to Take Great Photos, The Do's and Don'ts for Making Your Pictures the Best They Can Be, in the June 2025 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. And if you feel so inclined, you can catch Greg on the hot seat where Blake and Bambi evaluate some of Greg's photos he took just the previous day in Drumheller, Alberta, the land of the Badlands and the dinosaur. Well, Blake and Bambi, this has been absolutely eye-opening, literally, and I think I'm going to do better at taking photos in the future. If you could perhaps leave us with a couple of words of wisdom and perhaps a couple of pro tips that can help us take better pictures, that would be awesome.
For me, I would say a good tip would be, I tell myself that I'm processing twice when I'm taking photos. I'm processing the photo by taking the photo, and then I'm processing it again afterwards when I'm processing it in my head. And then another pro tip would be to hold your breath right before you click the shutter button. As you click it, you exhale. So you make sure you get a perfect shot in focus.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, that's great. Let's see, for me, overarching advice for all of this is just, like I said earlier in the podcast, I think photography is a very learnable skill by anybody. And it's a very accessible art form in the sense that most people are going to have a very, very high quality camera built into their phones nowadays. So a lot of it is just practice. So just get out there and practice. Doesn't even have to be in a club setting, just around town, just take pictures, people, buildings, try to keep as many of the tips and advice in mind as you can. And don't be too hard on yourself. Just take a bunch of pictures and then go through and just evaluate them for yourself and kind of see what you think turned out well and maybe what didn't and why. And It's just taking an abundance of pictures. That's going to get you good and more confident. Specific advice, I know for me, like I have a tendency, if I'm taking a picture, to almost rely too much on the image on the screen. Well, it depends on the camera. It's not as easy to do it with a smartphone, but if you can look through the eyepiece, I feel like that helps a lot because it kind of blocks out the rest of the world and really forces you to be fully immersed in the image you're about to take. Again, a little hard to do that with a smartphone, but if you can, just mentally try and just block out the rest of the world and really focus on the frame and the picture you're about to take. I find that's pretty helpful.
Just have fun with it.
At the end of the day, you get to take pictures.
Bambi Cash, Blake Carver, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure for us too. Thank you for putting this together and all the hard work you do on the Toastmasters podcast. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah.